Today we're going to give a listen to part one of a talk by Christian mystic Joel Goldsmith that was given, I believe, in the early 1960s. I'm Robin. Stay tuned for Tributaries.
The spiritual path gives us dominion, the dominion that was ours in the beginning, but which we have handed over to everything and everybody, instead of retaining within ourselves. We were given God-given dominion over everything on the earth, the waters and the skies, but little by little we have surrendered this dominion. We give the stars power over us in one way, and laws of infection and contagion in another way, and the calendar in another way, and the drunken driver on the road in still another way. Always we are yielding our dominion to others, either persons, things, or laws. Now, on the spiritual path, you once more assume dominion over your life. And that dominion is not assumed by using a power over anything, but by the continued inner recognition of the non-power of that which exists as effect. Now, germs are effects, and the stars, and weather, and climate, and alcohol, false appetites, all of these exist as effects, and therefore have no power except the power of belief that we give them. Therefore, dominion is exercised in proportion as we recognize God, Spirit, to be the only power and the only law. And therefore, true protective work is the realization that only God is power, and that that which appears to us as universal belief, whether it is a belief of infection or contagion, or a belief in hereditary disease or hereditary traits, whether it is a belief of astrology or a belief of any other nature, recognize that they exist only as universal belief. Impersonalize them. Don't blame them on any person. Don't blame them on any group of persons, or any race or nationality or religion. Be very careful that you do not personalize, because what you personalize in any way will come back to your own doorstep. Because in the last analysis, there is but one self. And what you are ascribing to another, you are ascribing to yourself. And eventually, it comes home to roost. In every way, even if you see a man steal a wallet, do not call him a thief. Recognize that this is another universal belief of lack or limitation, or another universal belief of gain. And you not only will free yourself from the possibility of being robbed, but you will also contribute to the healing of the man who himself believes he is a thief. You'd be surprised at the miracles that take place when you remove the guilt from another, when you no longer hold them in bondage to the belief of whatever name or nature is binding them. In other words, by seeing the person of ugly temperament as merely a victim of universal belief tends to free them, because you are not personalizing it you are not malpracticing. Always remember that our erroneous concepts constitute a form of malpractice. Every lie that we believe about another is really a form of malpractice upon them. You can see that in your pets in your home. If you have ever held them in condemnation of being bad or unruly or this, that, or the other thing, watch the change in their nature. When you reverse that and mentally apologize for having believed it and realize that in their true nature, they are of the same life that you are, of the same mind and spirit, and that these erroneous traits or qualities were never of them, but of this universal belief. And you will quickly see how it is that eventually the lamb and the lion will lie down together. By stopping our malpractice of the lion, we cannot spiritualize our own consciousness to the extent of being healers until we have sufficiently known and practiced protective work so that we start our day steadfast in the realization of one infinite power. Then the rest of the day, regardless of the appearances that touch us, whether in the form of sin, disease, death, lack, limitation, we are now in a position to reject them as of no power because we have established ourselves in that consciousness the first thing in the morning. We don't have to wait for the telephone bell to ring and bring us the news of sin and disease. We don't have to wait for the radio to tell it to us and overcome us. We don't have to wait for fear to descend upon us before we begin our treatment. We can prevent ourselves being overcome by these appearances, individual or worldwide, if we have protected ourselves in the morning, completely freed ourselves of the belief in two powers, two laws. This is important, this subject of law. Every form of evil comes in the guise of law. There's a law of economics, you know, that says there are boom times and bust times. There are economic laws of abundance and of lack, of good seasons and bad seasons. And the upswing and the downswing, they all have laws to support them. And there are laws behind storms, laws behind tidal waves, and laws behind all these erroneous phenomena of nature. But these are not law except as we accept them as law. The only law there can be is the law of God. And there is no other law because God is infinite. And therefore, God's law must be infinite, and therefore there cannot be any other laws. So then, these material laws or laws of matter, these laws of weather, laws of age, laws of infection and contagion, laws of sin and disease, these operate only on the physical and mental levels of life. And the moment you come to the spiritual level, in which you recognize God as infinite being, you nullify the belief that there are laws of matter or laws of mind. The reason you can be sure that laws of matter and laws of mind are not spiritual is this. All material laws and mental laws can be used for good or for evil. Therefore, they cannot be of God. That which is of God can be neither good nor evil. It can only be spiritual, eternal, infinite, perfect. There's no such thing as a degree of good. There's no such thing as evil in the life and the law of God. Therefore, wherever you find the pairs of opposites, the good and the evil, you are dealing only either with matter or mind. The very moment that you rise above these, you find a level of consciousness in which there is not good and evil, there is only pure spiritual, infinite, eternal, harmonious being. That is life as it was in the Garden of Eden before the belief in two powers was accepted. You can see, therefore, that whether you are practicing spiritual truth in your family circle or on a wider scale, that you will not make too much of a success if you haven't gotten into the habit of starting your day immersed in spiritual truth. Then, if you live and move and have your being in God consciousness, none of these things will come nigh thy dwelling place. If you are abiding in the secrets of the Most High, none of these things will come nigh thy dwelling place. If you establish yourself in the realization of one power, the completion of your protective work is done. When you take this next step and realize that this power of good, this power of spirit, operates from within your own being. It does not act upon you. It works out from you and acts upon this world. In other words, you are the transparency through which the law and life of God functions. And it functions within you and out from you, so that just as the woman who touched the master's robe was healed because he was a transparency through which this presence and power of good was flowing, so does your consciousness become the transparency or the instrument through which the law of God flows out into this world. And you will quickly see how it acts upon your cats and dogs and your children and your grandchildren and on your neighbors and on those with whom you come in contact. It will not take you 6 days of this practice before it will be brought to your attention by people that you have changed, or what has happened to you, or there is something felt from within you. Remember, this can't happen if you think of God as separate and apart from yourself and acting toward you. It only comes when you accept the Master's teaching that the kingdom of God is within you, and therefore this presence and power of God is flowing out through you and from you, and it acts upon this world. As a matter of fact, it acts upon the animate and the inanimate. This presence and power of God within you draws to you all of which you may have need in your day, whether it is person or thing or circumstance. This presence and power of God operating invisibly through you out into this world draws unto you the very people or the very circumstances or the very things of which you have need. You will notice in our class book, Metaphysical Notes, The theme running all the way through that book is my conscious oneness with God constitutes my oneness with all spiritual being and idea. And you will find that this is absolute truth, that as you abide in this truth, the kingdom of God is within me. It is forever saying to me, Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. Thou art ever with me. We are one. I and my Father are one. And the Father is eternally saying, all that I have is thine. Thou art ever with me. We are one. The place whereon thou standest is holy ground. Where thou art, I am. Where I am, thou art. For we are one. And as you abide in that oneness, you will find that you are one with every person in the world who belongs in your life. Every person whom you can bless or who can bless you is drawn into your experience. Every circumstance or everything, from dollars to donuts, of which you may have a need, will flow into your experience without your taking thought. The only thought you have to take is the constant remembrance of your relationship to God, of the establishment of the kingdom of God within you, of the truth that all that God is, I am, all that God has is mine, all that is of the Father is mine, for we are one. Now, this, you must remember, is still your work early in the morning before your day has started. That is why we have to awaken long before our families are up. That is why, even though we may not get out of bed, it isn't necessary if it's more comfortable to stay there. Stay there, only don't be asleep when you're doing this work, or even half asleep, because it must be a conscious knowing of the truth. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. And as you start your day in your protection from the belief in two powers, as you start your day in the realization that power does not act upon you, it flows out from you, and it is the power of God, good, the power of spirit, the power of life. Now you are so established that the rest of the day, as negative appearances touch you, whether in your own experience or in the experience of family or friends or later patients and students, you are prepared for it. You recognize them now to be only appearances without foundation, appearances without ordination, without any empowerment from God, without any law of God to support or sustain, and you can quickly give your treatments. Now it is not a matter of a long routine, because you have prepared your consciousness, you have spiritualized it, so that it instantly recognizes a negative appearance as a nothingness, as an illusion, as temporal power having no law of God. Now this comes to the next logical point. Very few people recognize the power in silence and the power in secrecy. And the reason is this: we have really been hypnotized into a belief that there's a God somewhere, separate and apart from our own being, until we have actually forgotten that God is our very consciousness. God is our very being, our own being, that right where I am, God is, since we are one. Now the Master saw the power of secrecy and of silence, and he taught it. He said that when you pray, you were to enter your sanctuary, not to be seen of men, but to be alone and to pray in secret. And then he said, your Father that seeth in secret will reward thee openly. Now, as you do this work in the morning, don't speak about it to anyone. Don't even be coerced into speaking to your family about it. You keep it locked up within yourself. This is your prayer. And you want that prayer to be answered, not only for yourself, but for all those with whom you come in contact. And all you do by voicing this is ensure the fact that it won't work. You ensure your own failure by talking about this. You are to keep these principles locked up within yourself and never discussed except when teaching them. This means that if there is a member of your family receptive and responsive to spiritual work, and they want to follow you on this path, then of course it becomes your function to instruct them and to work with them until they become as adept at it as you yourself. Ah, that is one thing. But voicing it otherwise is to ensure your loss of it. Now, God is our very consciousness. And this God knows the intents and the purposes of our hearts. It knows our innermost nature. Therefore, it is never fooled by lip service. And so all of the mouthing of truth that we may do doesn't fool our consciousness. Our consciousness knows the depth and degree of our integrity. And so, trying to show off how much we know by telling it to others isn't fooling our consciousness. It knows that we're being a show-off. It knows that we are trying to glorify our egos, or trying to sell truth to somebody else who doesn't want it. Our consciousness knows that we do not have a noble purpose in that. We may believe that we are doing good, or that we want to do good, but our consciousness knows that that is not true. Our consciousness knows that deep down in our hearts, we already know that nobody wants truth except those who really want it and show it and are willing to work for it, sacrifice for it, give for it, live for it, die for it. Do you not see that that is one of the reasons for these closed classes? I want to be awfully sure that who is sitting in this room, those sitting in this room, want this as much as I want to share it. That they want it, that they hunger for it and thirst for it. Otherwise, I don't want to talk about it. I'd rather go home and sit on the beach and live with it myself than just go around making a parade of it to those who do not want it, casting pearls before swine. There's no fun in that. There's no joy in it. There's no spirituality in it. There's no profit in it. So it is. you work with this protective work every single morning of your lives. Work with it faithfully throughout these coming days and weeks and months, but keep it locked up within yourself and show forth by fruitage that which is taking place within you. And then just because somebody says, oh, how do you do it, or what's doing it, don't rush to tell them. Remember, you have found a pearl of great price, and those who want it, let them show by their sincerity, let them show by their studies, by their devotion, that they want it, and then share it. Be as liberal as you want to be with it, but first be sure. All who come saying Christ, Christ, don't want Christ. Remember that the vast majority of those who come to us are not interested in truth. They're interested only in that which can be gained from truth, some demonstration that is close to their heart. Don't be too free with this. Help them with it. Ah, yes, but help them through your secret prayers, through your secret knowing. But don't start spilling this all over. Don't start sharing it until you know that the one with whom you're sharing it is as devoted to it as you are, as deeply desirous of God awareness as you are, not merely of demonstration. Now, God, we are told, is closer to us than breathing, nearer than hands and feet, and it becomes necessary for you to know the secret of life. If you are to follow the spiritual way of life, you must know the secret of life, that which has been kept hidden from mankind and has been revealed only to the few. Moses made the great discovery of the secret of life. He discovered the name and nature of God. Now he knew by the very name and nature of God that it would not be understood if he revealed it to his people, because they were not yet prepared for any such knowledge. In other words, it had come to him through spiritual realization. It came to him as a divine revelation from within, and he was smart enough to know that just handing it to the brain of a man wasn't going to do him any good and could do him some harm. And therefore, the true name of God was never permitted to be spoken.
Part 2 with Christian mystic Joel Goldsmith next week. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, or sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Podcasting is at iTunes as Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.